Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Monday, May 18th, 2026, which means we are covering the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, May 17th. And Sarah, this is a milestone week for us. This is episode 399.
Almost at the big 400. We have a really packed and honestly quite dramatic show today. We are looking at Mozilla standing up to UK regulators over VPNs, a massive potential BitLocker backdoor from Microsoft, why AI might not actually speed up your software development processes, a nationwide sabotage campaign against Flock surveillance cameras, and finally, a reality check on native app development versus web tech when it comes to rendering text.
Let us jump right in. Our first story comes directly from Mozilla's Open Policy and Advocacy blog, and it pulled in nearly 700 points. Mozilla is formally pushing back against the UK's Department for Science, Innovation, and Technology. The UK regulators are consulting on a proposal to age-gate virtual private networks as a way to enforce the Online Safety Act.
Right, because kids are using VPNs to bypass the age assurance systems that the government is trying to mandate. But Mozilla is arguing that VPNs are essential privacy and security tools for everyone, including young people. They make the point that restricting access to privacy-protecting tech is completely counterproductive if your ultimate goal is to teach kids how to navigate the internet safely and competently. They are basically saying, do not break a fundamental privacy tool just because it makes age verification harder. You have to address the root causes of online harm instead.
What was really interesting was the discussion on Hacker News. A user named Ayashko pointed out a massive irony going on in Australia right now. The Australian government actually has official guides recommending that citizens use VPNs for their own cybersecurity.
But then another commenter, MJ Moss, noted that this is the exact same eSafety Commissioner office in Australia that is trying to aggressively enforce age verification for social media. It's this huge contradiction in government policy right now. Governments want citizens to be secure from malicious hackers, but they also want everyone to be fully visible to the state and its regulatory mechanisms.
The comments also got into the technical reality of why we still need VPNs. Some people argue that we don't need them as much anymore because of HTTPS everywhere, but others quickly corrected that, pointing out that captive portals at coffee shops and cheap public hotspots still harvest your data, and your DNS queries can still be visible. A VPN still provides a vital baseline of protection against IP-based profiling and local network snooping.
Moving on to our second story, and this one has some serious drama attached to it. A security researcher going by the name Nightmare Eclipse has released an exploit claiming that Microsoft secretly built a backdoor into BitLocker. This post got over 550 points, and the backstory is wild.
It really is. The researcher's blog indicates they might have been working with Microsoft, or at least going through a vulnerability disclosure process, and things went very wrong. In a blog post, they wrote that someone violated their agreement and left them homeless, so this public release is essentially their revenge. They specifically called it a crash out and promised a big surprise for Microsoft's next patch Tuesday.
The Hacker News comments were trying to piece together what actually happened. Is this an insider leaking secrets or an independent researcher who felt burned by the bug bounty program? A commenter named Ron O. Fez brought up a sad but common reality in the tech world, noting that sometimes brilliant people struggle with emotional regulation and the professional maturity required for responsible vulnerability disclosure. It sparked a whole debate about the ethics of disclosure versus corporate exploitation of researchers.
Setting the personal drama aside, the technical claims are alarming. The vulnerability seems to involve how Microsoft caches the BitLocker key. In a default mode, the key is supposed to stay in the Trusted Platform Module, or TPM, and only release to the correct operating system. But the exploit suggests that if you manipulate the system correctly, it might just drop an administrator shell.
A user named Mananaya Siempre broke this down in the comments, explaining that the issue might not be the TPM itself, but the unwisely large attack surface of the boot process, like the USB stack. If an attacker can interrupt the boot sequence or manipulate the environment, they might bypass the measured boot protections entirely. It is a stark reminder that physical access to a machine is still the ultimate trump card, even with enterprise-grade encryption.
For our third story, we have a great blog post from Frederick Van Brambent titled, "I Don't Think AI Will Make Your Processes Go Faster." This hit a nerve with the community, getting over 520 points.
Frederick argues that every company out there is trying to optimize processes right now, and management just assumes throwing AI at software development will magically speed things up.
He uses a project timeline to show that while the actual coding phase takes the most time on paper, the real bottleneck is upstream. It is the scoping, the feature exploration, the legal approvals, and translating vague requests into actual logical requirements. AI cannot fix bad requirements.
Exactly. He makes the point that if you just tell an AI to build a feature based on a vague one-liner, it will generate code incredibly fast, but it will be the wrong code. You end up spending all your time hand-holding the AI, writing hyper-detailed prompts and debugging its hallucinations. And as Frederick points out, if you gave human developers that same level of detailed documentation, their productivity would skyrocket too. He references classic management books like The Toyota Way and The Goal, reminding us that bottlenecks need predictable, high-quality inputs.
The Hacker News comments really validated this frustration. A user named Argar12 said that getting perfect, detailed requirements so you can one-shot a perfect solution is a myth that needs to die. Software engineering is an iterative process of discovery. You do not know what you are building until you start building it.
And there is a fascinating thread about Anthropic's recent attempt to build a C compiler using their Claude AI. A commenter pointed out that even with perfect specs, thousands of tests, and reference implementations, the AI struggled. It produced code that was incredibly slow and buggy. Another user, Joseph G, shared their real-world experience, saying they spend about 10% of their time prompting the AI for new features and 90% of their time cleaning up the junk it outputs, fixing memory leaks, and refactoring bad architecture.
It really grounds the AI hype. AI is an amazing tool for iterating faster and writing boilerplate, but it is not a magic wand that replaces the hard work of system design, human alignment, and rigorous testing.
Our fourth story today is a bit more rebellious. The headline is, at least 25 Flock cameras have been destroyed in 5 states since April 2025. This is from the State of Surveillance blog and got over 400 points.
For those who might not know, Flock Safety is a massive company valued at over $7 billion. They put AI-powered license plate reading cameras in neighborhoods and cities. They pitch it purely as community safety, but the article details how these cameras are feeding data directly into federal immigration enforcement. Local police are running thousands of searches tagged for ICE.
And citizens are furious. The article mops out how people across the country, from California to Virginia, are taking vice grips and metal cutters to these cameras. They are chopping down the poles, ripping out the wiring, and smashing the solar panels. One guy in Virginia, Jeffrey Sovern, got caught after systematically destroying 13 cameras. He basically released a statement saying he did it to protect the Fourth Amendment and set up a legal defense fund.
The public reaction is what makes this story so compelling. The article notes that Reddit threads are full of near-universal support for the sabotage. In places like La Mesa, California, the city council held a town hall about the cameras. The room was packed with people opposing them, but the council voted to keep them anyway. So residents just took matters into their own hands and destroyed the cameras a few weeks later.
It is a classic case of the surveillance state expanding faster than public consent. Flock's CEO has claimed mass surveillance could eliminate all crime, but as the article concludes, the people smashing the cameras believe mass surveillance is the crime. The Hacker News comments were mostly sympathetic to the saboteurs. Many users viewed this as a predictable, almost inevitable response when official democratic channels ignore the clear will of the people.
It definitely highlights a growing tension. We are seeing cities start to hide the locations of these cameras to prevent vandalism, which only makes the transparency problem worse. But the pushback is working in some places. Amazon recently killed its Ring Flock partnership, and dozens of cities have formally rejected the cameras. It is a modern Luddite movement, but focused on privacy instead of labor.
Our final story today is a technical piece by Artem Loenko called Native All the Way, Until You Need Text. It really resonated with the developer crowd, pulling in over 400 points.
Artem has been a native macOS and iOS developer for almost 20 years. He decided to build a simple chat app with Markdown support using pure Swift and SwiftUI. He wanted to do everything right, staying completely native to the Apple ecosystem. But he hit a massive wall when it came to text rendering and selection.
Right. He found that selecting a whole Markdown document built from SwiftUI primitives is basically impossible by design. So he dropped down to older frameworks like OpKit and TextKit 2. He spent days fighting CPU spikes, blinking cells, and broken text streaming. He realized it would take months just to get basic native behaviors like context menus, dictionary lookup, and accessibility working properly.
So in a moment of defeat, he spun up an Electron project using web technologies, and to his amazement, it just worked. Text operations, markdown rendering, great typography, all out of the box with better performance than his native attempts. He concluded that Apple's native SDKs actually become constraints when you need to build long-form, rich text interfaces. He says it explains why almost all modern chat apps use WebTech.
The Hacker Hughes discussion was a great mix of empathy and pushback. Rendering formatted text is notoriously difficult. One commenter pointed out the insane edge cases you have to handle, like what happens to a style change in the middle of an Arabic word, or how selection boundaries move with arrow keys. A web browser has decades of engineering solving these exact problems.
One iOS developer, M. Septon, chimed in saying they recently built a highly performant native text editor that can handle a 5,000-line document with sub-8-millisecond restyling, but they admitted it took them 8 months to build.
And that was exactly Artem's point. If you are building a text editor as your core product, sure, spend 8 months wrestling with TextKit. But if text rendering is just a feature of a broader app, like a chat interface, you cannot afford to waste that much time. As another commenter put it, developers want to ship products, not fight the operating system's limitations. It is a sobering reality check for the native purists out there. Sometimes the web stack, despite its reputation for being bloated, is just the most pragmatic tool for the job.
And that brings us to the end of episode 399. Five really distinct stories today, from the philosophy of the open web and hardware hacking to the realities of AI and native app development.
Thank you so much for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or leave us a review. It really helps us out.
We will be back tomorrow for our big episode 400, bringing you the latest and greatest from Hacker News. Until then, keep building and stay curious.
See you tomorrow.